What is up, everybody? My name is John Sparks. I am your host for Sparks of the Paranormal. And I want to say a huge thank you to everybody out there that's been showing love and support on the Instagram, the Facebook page, all the podcasting platforms. You guys freaking rock, man. Seriously, thank you so much. And I think we're all really enjoying this journey together as we learn more about UFOs, cryptids, spirits, ghosts, demons, everything that goes bump in the night. And if you guys want to support the show, guess what? I just dropped merch. That's right. If you go to the Instagram page or you go to the Facebook page, you'll find a link there. It's going to get you some sweet, sweet paranormal swag. Maybe some dope hats, some wicked sweet t-shirts, maybe even a bandana for your paranormal pup. That's right. Grab a bandana, slap it on that pup. I want to see a picture on Instagram. With that being said, grab a seat, kids. Get ready, because it's about to get crazy on a brand new episode of Sparks of the Paranormal. Hey, what is up, everybody? Welcome back to Sparks of the Paranormal. I am your host, John Sparks, and today I've got a very, very special episode for you. I am trying hard not to freak out internally and externally. I have a guy that actually inspired me to get off my butt and start doing the podcast about the paranormal. He's got at least two shows out there that I know of right now, with The Grave Talks, which is a phenomenal one, and Real Ghost Stories Online. And his child is a child prodigy when it comes to podcasting. She's got her own show, and she's like 8 years old, called Cautionary Tales with Harper. I'm just blown away by this family just all together. Ladies and gentlemen, it is my pleasure to introduce to you Mr. Tony Bruschi. Tony, how are you doing today?
Well, after that intro, very well. Thank you for boosting my self-esteem for the day. I appreciate it.
Oh, it is my pleasure. Trust me, we all needed the boost every now and then.
No kidding.
So,
Thank you for having me on.
Yeah, no, it's a huge pleasure. I honestly, like I said, dude, I had no idea that you guys were going to say, yeah, let's do this thing. So I'm just incredibly humbled right now.
Well, I'm more than happy to, so I'm glad to be here.
So I've got to ask, where did your obsession with the paranormal begin?
Where did it all begin? Well, most of my answers will be long-winded, so I'll warn you in advance. So
that's fine.
If I look all the way back, I think it had something to do with Ghostbusters, like the TV show.
Yeah.
My mom watching episodes of Unsolved Mysteries, and just, I always loved Halloween. I loved the feeling of autumn and fall and graveyards and all that. They were spooky to me, but they weren't scary to me. And spooky to me is almost like warm and cuddly. For some reason, it's like a warm blanket you drape around yourself and sit around a fire. But that's really truly how it was. I mean, I literally have cassette tapes that were given to me by my aunt of me at the age of 2, playing what I was calling at the time Ghostbuster Radio. So I was 2 years old, talking into a cassette recorder, pretending to be doing a radio show, talking about ghosts. Now, this is 1984 or so when that was recorded, and there was no such thing as podcasts, there wasn't the internet, these concepts didn't exist, so I was pretending I was on the radio. Just the fact that I was doing it at 2, and now, all these years later, it's still what I'm doing is kind of baffling to me. But when I look all the way back there, it goes back to just kind of being in those settings and having a family that loved Halloween and walking through graveyards and just appreciating the beauty of them with the hills and the trees and just learning the history and all that. And then, you know, at the time, of course, the 80s, Ghostbusters were a big thing. So that all just kind of made the perfect storm to create the insanity that my mind is.
I get that on a whole nother level. Like, I've always been slightly obsessed with Halloween, and, you know, in my family, it was very much a thing where we don't talk about the paranormal. I've had experiences since I was, you know, almost fetal, and, like, here I am 32 years later, and we're finally at a point now where, you know, talking about the paranormal and everything like that is normal, and I can finally be out there with it, but I had to be quiet at home, you know what I mean? And
sure. And
then I had to be quiet outside, but I had on the inside, I'm just bursting with this love for everything surrounding Halloween, the dark, you know, the paranormal, everything. I'm like giddy as a schoolgirl, but on the outside, calm as a cucumber.
Yeah, it's an interesting interesting thing when you get into it, and because it doesn't necessarily require other people around you to be into it either. I mean, if you're like me, I'm self-diagnosed Aspie or Asperger's, but my therapist agrees, but the official diagnosis, but I think it's close enough. But you know, when you're like that, you can go down these rabbit holes and just be so enthralled and obsessed with things. And you know, it certainly helps when you have community around you, which is what I found with doing the shows, to have other people be like, hey, yeah, you're not alone in having this interest. And I didn't personally have like a lot of experiences, I would say, growing up that were paranormal, but I did always believe in ghosts. It was just like, it was a fact of life. Like, I believe ghosts are out there. I don't have to see them to believe them. Enough people are having these experiences that this is something that truly is going on. I think I always kind of wanted to have an experience when I was little, looking back and after hearing all of the stories on the shows over the years, I'm glad I didn't, because it could have gone horribly bad. But I mean, I was the kid who would, we had a great graveyard, and I just posted a picture of it on social media the other day, because my mom still goes and walks there all the time. Wow. And when I was a kid, I would go and walk there with her. And sometimes I would go alone. This is, again, the 80s. There was less restrictive parenting. Oh, yeah. I don't know that I would have done the same thing back then, but I wandered through the woods. If you go about a half mile through this woods in my backyard, up a hill and then through a farmer's field and then back into the woods, you end up at the back of a cemetery. And wow. This is just your most perfect, creepy-ass cemetery. You walk in like where nuns are buried. So there's this very specific area for that. And at the time, there was a lot of... What the word am I looking for? Not violence, but I guess desecration of the cemetery. There was a lot of kids getting in there and knocking over these gravestones and breaking them. That has since improved since the late 80s. But at the time, it was really kind of getting beat up. But the truth is, you're 100 years old in twirling hills, and you can get lost in this thing because it's so damn big. But I would go back in there and wander through this creepy cemetery or wander through this creepy woods, and then through the trees, you start to see the gravestones through the woods. And then you get up into it, and I'm wearing my plastic proton pack, which actually still I can see it sitting in my office right over there. And I would be wandering around this graveyard by myself, pretending to catch ghosts, as, you know, Lucille over there is mourning Uncle Ernie, and I'm over there pretending I'm catching Uncle Ernie on the other side of the graveyard. God only knows what these people, you know, they probably have their own stories of that time they saw the kid with the proton pack wandering around the cemetery. But to me, it's like happy childhood memories.
Well, I mean, what it sounds like, honestly, is you've always been a professional if you were carrying around that proton pack.
So. I guess so. We're professionals, man. And I hate that term when it comes to stuff now as an adult. Or like expert, I hate too, because it's like nobody's an expert. Like somebody if you be more experienced or have more knowledge, just because we, you know, we talk about it. But experience does not equate to expert on every topic, ghost being one of them.
Exactly. So I love the fact that you're just wandering around with a proton pack. Like that's phenomenal to me. I remember the old cartoon show, was it the Extreme Ghostbusters, and you know, I grew up with all those movies, you know, and it's just I get it, you know, wanting to run around. I used to use one of those old handheld Hoover vacuums to be my little proton pack, so I get it.
Yeah, with more works, you gotta make do. Especially if you have like a friend over or a cousin or something and you don't have more proton packs. It's like, well, I think that cardboard box over there will work. Hey, so can we get string to wrap the cat around our back and use that for the proton pack? Tail works. But then you get yelled at by your mom when you have a cat that hates you.
Yeah, it's frowned upon in most situations. So I one big question that I want to know is, How did you and your wife meet, and when did you realize that you guys together wanted to put out a podcast?
It was late night in a cemetery, and she was ringing a bell from beneath the ground. Oh my God, this one's alive. No. actually, it was eHarmony, and not a plug. We don't get, like, paid every time we say eHarmony. But eHarmony, I'm kidding. But we met through eHarmony, and just started our first date. We sat at a restaurant and literally Closed a place down. We were just sitting there talking, and I think I drank like 20 cups of coffee. And I was nervous. She was nervous. She almost didn't even come in. But we had communicated via, you know, emails and such before, and it was a really good rapport. And we just totally hit it off. And early on, you know, we talked about ghosts a little, you know, bit here and there, our kind of interest in it. I was not doing the ghost show yet. I was just in commercial radio, but I had done ghost shows on the air around Halloween or October. I'd really amp that up and do that, but it wasn't doing a podcast yet. Mm-hmm. And we just found all these very similar interests. In fact, one day we were going through an antique store. It was probably like our third or fourth date. Yes, this is what we do. We still go to antique stores, all the, you know, when we can. We're on our third or fourth date. We walked around an antique store, and I found this old metal Titanic, you know, hang on your wall sign. Mm. And I said, oh, I love Titanic. You know, I said, when I was a kid, I was like borderline obsessed with that, because I was. I mean, the way I was obsessed with ghosts is how I was obsessed with Titanic. Yeah. As a child, I could like just rattle up all this shit. And all these years later, I go, hey, that's very Aspie of me. It was, I just knew all the things. And she thought I was making fun of her. And she was trying to figure out how on earth I knew that about her, that she too, as a child, and we're pretty much the same age, about 1 year difference, had this extreme fascination with Titanic as well. And just turns out we both had that same sort of interest. And by, like, I think our, I don't know, 14th or 15th date, we actually went and saw Dr. Ballard, who found the Titanic. Mm. He was doing a lecture in Wichita, where we lived at the time. And we were just totally geeking out, and I got a book that was a child signed by him, and it was just a neat experience. But we had a lot of just kind of deep down oddity things that, you know, you don't share with a lot of people, or you don't connect with on a lot of people, that yeah. We just connect on.
That is so cool. It gives me a lot of hope. Maybe one day I will find somebody that has the same issues that I do.
Kind of how I feel, you know. It's like, yeah, we have the same issues, and we can share them together. And I don't want to say, you know, harmony. I mean, no relationship is perfect. There's always stuff, but we certainly do the best with what we have, and we, you know, love each other very much, and know our quirks left and right. And sometimes they can be a blessing, and sometimes they can be a curse. But there's absolutely no one else I would rather be with to share all that stuff with.
Exactly, and I can tell you just from listening to Real Ghost Stories, where she co-hosts with you, you guys definitely are yin and yang. Like, she's like, I hate to put it like this, but you're like the dark side and she's like the light side, you know what I mean?
On some days. But yes, I totally agree with you.
And that's what I've got to find. I've got to find my light side. So what year was it that you guys looked at each other and said, hey, let's start a paranormal podcast together?
Well, that's not even exactly how it started. What year was it? Let me take a look. I want to say it was like 2014 or something there. Early 2014, late 2013, right around there. I left commercial radio doing FM. That was This Is Here's Weather and Traffic. I had another business. I still have another business where I make radio and TV commercials. And mm-hmm. I left radio just to do that thing at home and make the ads and be happy not having to work for someone. But I, when you're on the radio and you've been on the radio, or I was going on my 20th year at the time, because I started on the air when I was 14 years old.
Wow.
It's in you. And it's just like, you love it. It's part of your life. Even though I was just burned out announcing bad country music and throwing traffic, I wanted the idea of podcasting just seemed great to me. So I'm like, well, I can do any topic I want. And it honestly kind of stemmed from working on projects around the house and wanting to listen to something that was on the line of ghosts. And at the time, there wasn't a lot of podcasts out there on ghosts. I know Jim Harold was before us, and there might have been a couple others that I honestly don't know the names of. But and I'm not trying to be disrespectful. I just didn't listen to anybody. But I would look up YouTube, and I would find old Art Bell and old Coast to Coast episodes.
Oh, yeah.
And I love listening to the Halloween episodes, the Ghost to Ghost ones. But there's only, you know, 14, 15 of those. I don't know how many years he did them, but I would listen to him. I loved listening to him. I thought, wouldn't it be great if there was a podcast that was like this, with more than just once a year content, you know, that is this style. The style Art was doing, where it's callers, commentary. But I wanted to add some humor to it. So I was kind of taking that format idea, adding my personality to it, and thought, you know what? I bet if I do this, I bet there'll be a handful of people out there that are doing crap around their house too that would enjoy listening to this. So I had no real expectations of where it was going to go or how many listeners we were going to get. It was just going to be, I'm going to do this to feed that desire to be on the air.
Yeah.
And I started doing it by myself. Once a week or so. It wasn't even like superly scheduled. Sometimes I do more than one a week, sometimes I do less. And about, I don't know, 15, 20 episodes in, we're all kind of started thinking, you know, I need a co-host. I've done morning radio before, long form radio where you're talking for lengths of time. Works better when you have someone to bounce things off of.
Exactly.
It's hard to just do that by yourself without being an insane narcissist of some sort. And I don't think I am, but you need somebody to kind of go back and forth. So I said to her, you know, you want to try an episode with me? Because she, you know, was looking at me strangely because I go and lock myself in a bedroom once a week and talk about ghosts of, you know, the air. And she finally said, sure. So she came in, did one episode, discovered she enjoyed doing it. And it was good. She'd never been on the air. She had no experience in broadcasting or anything like that. But she was a really good co-host, just right out of the gate. Better than professional co-hosts that I've had in the past. And we just kept doing it. And she started to really love it. And she actually encouraged us to do it more than once a week. I'm talking about the show, the show just kind of grew from there, and it slowly but surely evolved into what it is today. You know, as time has progressed, things have happened where she had to go off the show for a little bit when she was trying to focus on some things, and she came back on. We've added Carol to the show, who was someone I actually worked with at my last radio station.
Yeah.
She has a ton of stories. And now even my daughter, who was like 1 year old at the time that we started the show, is now a weekend co-host with us. And she's starting her own podcast. So it's just kind of something that's going to keep growing. And I always just kind of joke, you know, I will do this till I can no longer do it. I'm never going to retire from it. And hopefully Harper ends up just kind of taking it at some point when I no longer speak.
Well, and from what it seems, you know, she's going to be the perfect heir to the throne, so to speak. That kid's got it. And she is so young, and she is already just a natural. And I'm blown away. I'm absolutely blown away. And let's see. I'm flabbergasted by everything that has just been thrown at me, and I'm just flabbergasted at the fact that you're on here. So I gotta know, like, when did you guys decide to just completely, like, separate yourselves from the city and then move out of town?
Well, we've had so many moves over the course of our, we were in Wichita, then we were in Branson, then we came over here to Northwest Arkansas, we were in the Rogers-Bentonville area, and then COVID hit. You may have heard of that. It's this really shitty disease that goes around and affects a lot of people.
Yeah, I hear it's not going well.
2030, it sucked. It really, really sucked. But if you're listening to it right now, you know, it sucks. It really, really sucks. Wear a fucking mask. That's my message of the day. What we decided to do, we were in Rogers-Bentonville, which, if you've never heard of it, I don't blame you. I've lived close by for a good portion of my life and had no idea it existed.
Oh, cool.
But their Walmart is headquartered. And it's a wonderful area of the country. Yeah, with Walmart headquarters is here, and it's really nice city. The cap people are friendly. Northwest Arkansas is a lovely area. If you have stereotypical views of Arkansas, it's not Northwest Arkansas. It's just a nice area.
Yeah.
And the whole state is really quite beautiful. But We were up in this area that was fairly populated in a very tight neighborhood, and we kind of like felt like, hey, you know, this will be good. It's nice, it's secure, and all that. And really, you couldn't complain about the neighborhood we were in. It was one of the nicest in the area. But really, just kind of surrounded by Walmart executives and executives for every company in the world that sells through Walmart. And then here we are, the oddballs that tell ghost stories in the neighborhood. And so we didn't really fit in with kind of that uppity crowd that, you know, it wasn't us. And there was nice people in there, but there were some real shitholes too, which kind of inspired that podcast Nightmare Neighbors that we did for a short period of time.
Yeah.
But it was just, you know, COVID was striking. We had always wanted to go and live on a farm and just kind of be away from people because that's how we are. That's part of the Aspie thing in us. We're the type that are just, we like our aloneness and being away from people, and we're just more at peace by ourselves, as we were when we were children too. Just kind of, we were the wallflowers in a lot of ways, which, you know, it's crazy with what we do, but we really are quiet people when we're by ourselves.
Yeah.
And we were just driving around during COVID because we couldn't go anywhere, and we saw this farm, or this house, I should say, that was on 7 acres of land that went up for sale. And we were really getting frustrated with where we were living, and we'd only been there like 6 months, but already we're just like, yeah. And we wanted to go see it. So we went and saw it like the day it went on the market, and real estate at that moment in time was selling very quick in our previous neighborhood, so we thought, well, we could sell our house pretty darn quick and get this if we wanted to. Yeah. It was perfect. So we did, and we bought this house, and then we've now constructed a farm around it, two pastures, a barn, chicken coop, and I have a new studio that's being constructed as we speak right outside of this studio, so it's actually going to be a separate building. And it's just, you know, we wanted to be away from things and just kind of have our space and be at peace with our animals and tell ghost stories, for lack of a better term. Yeah. And one of the, there was kind of an interesting spooky thing that kind of happened when we first looked at it. It was kind of a sign, if you will. Jen had a border collie when she was a child and loved it very much. Oreo was its name. And we were standing outside on the back porch after we had walked through the house with a realtor, and we were both kind of like, this is it. Like, let's get an offer in now before somebody takes this thing.
Yeah.
And this border collie starts walking towards us on this back porch, and she's like, oh my gosh, it looks just like my dog Oreo. Even had like the same limp that Oreo had from being hit by a car.
That's not creepy at all.
Just kind of slowly gets up and walks up to us, and then jumps up on the porch right next to us, and it's just like, wants to be best friend. And it was just kind of like, okay, I'm hoping to God that this works out and we get this house, because this is the perfect story, and it's going to break Jen's heart if this house does not come through for us. So I kidnapped the dog and then put it ransom and said, we have to make this thing work or the dog dies. And everybody belonged to it, and it worked out. It worked out. And we got the house. The dog now, there's folks out front right now putting the front pasture fence up together. And this dog is our neighbor's dog. And it just hangs out and comes over to our porch like it's our dog, too. Since then, we've gotten our own border collie, too. So they kind of hang out, too. But it was just one of those weird little things that you go, how did that happen? What was that all about? And I have another interesting story, if you'd like, that's kind of ghostly or supernatural, I would say, that connects us to this house.
Oh, yeah, bring it on.
Go on about that. So there was another thing. Prairie Grove, Arkansas is technically where we live. It's right outside Fayetteville. It's one of the suburbs of this whole area. And about 4 or 5 miles from our house, like 2,500 plus people died in the Battle of Prairie Grove.
Wow.
Very, you know, sad, you know, thing. Obviously, it was the Civil War and all that. Now it's this beautiful park that you can walk through and wander around, and it's really quite peaceful. But, you know, you think of the history, like, oh my God. So anyway, just looking up history of the area and finds this painting online that is portraying the Battle of Prairie Grove. Mm. She goes, oh my God, that is the same painting I had in my dining room in her first marriage. Because we both had previous marriages before we met 10 years or 11 years back. And she's not someone who typically hangs war art on the wall. She's more about, you know, Joanna Gaines style, sheer shiplap and, you know, happy, you know, not bloody scenes of decapitation and death.
Yeah.
But she had loved this portrait, and she bought it all those years ago. Didn't know anything about Prairie Grove, didn't even know where it was, just thought, interesting picture. And it portrays a house that still stands on the Prairie Grove battlefield grounds called the Borden House, not Lizzie Borden House, although Harper would like to love singing about Lizzie Borden when we go by it. And it was just this, you know, interesting piece. And she, you know, when she got divorced, she just kind of lost track of it, didn't really think anything of it. And then she saw it and goes, oh my God, this is the Battle of Prairie Grove. This is where we live. This is like, pretty much portraying like within a couple mile radius of our house.
Wow.
And just a weird thing to realize that she had that connection all those years ago. Well, a week later, her mom is in an antique store and finds the exact same portrait that she had had on her wall.
Sweet,
like,
Jesus.
The one that was in her house. And she bought it. She immediately told Jen. Jen says, you know, buy it, I will pay you back. So it is literally right across in the office here from me. we have it back, and we're going to hang it up again in the new studio. But one of the weird things that points you in a direction and kind of confirms that you're going in the right direction, even though difficult and shitty and times are tough. And I mean, the world's going through a lot of shit, so are we, you know, and everybody has their own ball of personal stuff, so do we. But we've had a lot of like little reassurances that kind of have helped us get through all this nightmare, that just say, look, you're in the right place. And I just, you know, whatever religion anyone is, I believe there's something there that's pointing us to the way of saying you're in the right direction.
Well, I mean, you get the you know, bloody war painting, and then you get a carbon copy of an Oreo. It's pretty great.
Yeah, it works. So, my biggest fear is that we were going to show up here, not really fear, but it was kind of like, this would be interesting if we got here and we asked the neighbors, like, so whose border collie is that? And they're all like, no one has a border collie. Like, they're like, well, we had a border collie, but it died 10 years ago, you know, something.
Or just all of a sudden, she calls Oreo, and that dog just starts getting all happy. We're like, wait a second. Okay, hang on. Hang on a second.
Past life regression with a dog. We paid someone to do that, and the dog came and told us that it was, in fact, Oreo, and we figured it out. But no, I mean, but there's been just so many interesting things around here. I don't know if this is really a hey, you're in the right spot sign, but it was something that made me go, ooh, that's kind of cool. Our neighbor behind our house, because we're out of the country, and there's, you know, there's kind of been different areas, but many, many acres back, we were talking to them one day. And he was telling us a story of when they built their home, they were asking the previous landowner was asking them, you know, well, where are you planning on digging to build your home and the foundation? And he said, well, you know, in this spot right here by the river. And they said, well, I would suggest going about, you know, like 20 yards the other direction. I'm like, well, why is that? Well, because we buried that one family out there by the river in that area. So, I couldn't tell you when or who or why or any of that, but it's very interesting to me. It's not on my property, but it's not far. And to my knowledge, there is some unmarked graves not far away towards this river that's not far from our house. I don't know all the details, nor do I think they could even really be found out anymore. But, you know, this was, you know, I'm guessing going way, not that the previous owner did the burying, but I think like previous generations did, because it landed that family for many, many years. So take it for what it might have been. I don't know. This is in fact south, and you know, it has a shitty history when it comes to, you know,
burying people
like that. So I don't know what it was, but it could have been a family plot. It could have been something else. I don't know. But you know, obviously, it's something that happened probably hundreds of years ago, or but more than 100 years ago, but interesting nonetheless.
Yeah, just if you see a family of five, you know, walking across the back 40, be like, no, wrong property, over there.
Which I knew where it was, too, because I would, you know, if I knew that, I would go and, like, next to. I would go in, like, if there was any form of marker, try and prop it up, and just, you know, give it the reverence that someone deserves.
Exactly.
But if I have no idea where it even is. So if I ever did find that out, I would certainly treat it with a lot of respect, and I wish that we, you know, someone knew that. But
yeah,
you know, it's kind of just what it is.
Yeah. That's kind of creepy, to be honest with you. I grew up on a Civil War battlefield in Virginia, and my entire backyard was the Dismal Swamp in a massive Civil War battlefield. So yeah, you don't know who is buried where, but they're probably somewhere in the swamp in the backyard. So yeah.
Did you ever have experiences as a child when you were back there,
I don't know if it was related to the Civil War, but I did have a ton of experiences in that house. I know for one, there was a generational thing that my father saw, and I ended up seeing it in our attic. And then I actually had an uncle appear to me in the house, which was a little weird, because we'd moved like twice since he passed away, but he just showed up in the hallway. But yeah, I don't know if anything that I experienced had to do with that, but there was a lot going on in that house that obviously, you know, like we talked about before, I had to keep my mouth shut about, because I don't want Mama getting freaked out.
Sure.
So.
Sure. I think when you have areas that have a traumatic energy around them, whether it be a battlefield, which obviously there's a lot of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
Or an event, a disaster of some sort, where a lot of people either lost their life or even just experienced intense trauma and survived it. There's energy, I think, that's expelled in those areas. And it doesn't necessarily have to be the ghosts of the soldiers or stuff. But I think sometimes it's almost just like ripe ground for things to appear easier than they would in other areas. Just because it, you know, it's almost like it's a brighter spot to be seen. It's like maybe other areas are kind of darker and more in the shadows. Not literally illuminating, speaking, but just in terms of energy.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes when you have those hot spots, you're much more likely to have something show up, whether it's related to its original trauma or not. But if something's passing through, you're more likely to come across it in those spots than others.
And that's something that I've noticed a lot, is wherever there tends to be more of that tragedy, there tends to be more happening. And not only that, but just with the, you know, the natural habitat of the place, you've got all of that moving water back there. So that's also conducting a lot of that energy. So I don't know. I think it happened to be a perfect storm of things happening all at once, and it just, I happened to live in the middle of it.
That's interesting. That sounds like a really interesting place to grow up.
It was, and there was so much around that area that was reportedly haunted, and I mean, even in my high school, which was less than a mile from where I lived, you know, the auditorium was haunted, and I actually got to experience that, which was nuts, just sitting in the audience, and all of a sudden, from the catwalk, quarters start coming off the catwalk, all labeled 1975, which was the year the guy died and fell off the catwalk. And I'm just like, okay, cool. So now I can't escape it. This is great. Awesome. I love it. This is so exciting.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. It's one of those things where you tend to experience, I agree, where there's more that has happened that is not exactly pleasant, and there's a lot of death going on. The ground, I think, is permanently stained. And there's not a whole lot you can do with it. You could try to get it cleared, but I think, you know, over 150 years of stuff going on in the area, it's going to be a tough one to clear.
I agree.
Yeah. So what have you experienced when it comes to the paranormal?
You know, it's an interesting one, because when I get asked that question, I try and give you the best answers that I can. And then, like, usually, like, 3 days later, I'm like, shoot, I had to have been doing it. But so let me try and think about some of the things that have happened. Honestly, on the air, I've had some things happen, so those things tend to stand out to me.
Mm-hmm.
But outside of being on the air, there have been some things that if Jenny was here, she'd be able to rattle everything off because she has a good memory and I don't. But on the air, I would say one of the most interesting things that has happened to me, we had a caller years ago that was named Richard. Richard in Chattanooga.
Oh, yeah.
And just a very interesting character. Had this long story of all things happening to him and his family in his house. Very dark story. And very turbulent, very troubled by what was happening. And one of the calls that he had made to us, because it became a series of calls, there was this swooshing sound that happened between sentences that he was talking.
Mm-hmm.
And the sound to me, it didn't give me any red flags. It sounded like someone was talking, maybe leaning next to their patio door, like a sliding one, and that swooshing sound that you get sometimes in spring or fall.
Yeah.
And the air pressure just kind of making that noise. So I've heard it a gazillion times with my patio doors as a kid, so I didn't anything was unusual. And went through that call, aired it, and then right after we aired it, I started getting emails and phone calls from people all over the world saying, what the hell was that sound? I got sick to my stomach. Some people literally physically getting ill after hearing it, throwing up, and just feeling like crap after listening to that call. I mean, the call was spooky, but, you know, there wasn't anything, like, in there that was, like, grotesque or something that really would turn your stomach. It was just that sound, they said, is what triggered them. And I went back and I listened to it, and I reached out to Richard and said, where were you when you made that call? When it wasn't your patio door, what was that sound? He's like, I was just laying on my couch. There was no sound. Everyone was asleep. I could attest that there was no noise in my background. But all the interesting thing is, it wasn't like a group pile-on thing where you say it on the air, like one person felt sick, and then everybody jumps on and say they felt sick too.
Yeah.
These were independently coming into us before we ever went back on the air. All these people saying the same things. So we went back on the air and shared, like, all these people saying these things. And then, yes, of course, even more people came on and said that they felt that way too. But that was just really bizarre to me, that people from all over had this same experience from this sound. So that to me, I think, goes down, being on the air and off the air, as one of the strangest, most paranormal events that I've ever been involved with. We had another one with a woman. I called her the dish lady, because it sounded like she was putting dishes away while talking on the phone, telling her ghost story. And I was rude to her on the air when we got done with that call. It was early on in the show. We were kind of still in that early phase of training people, like, please talk into your phone clearly and don't be doing a ton of things while you're talking into your phone. And it sounded like she was putting dishes away, like very obnoxiously putting dishes away. And it sounded like china or, you know, whatever, you know, dishes are made of, stoneware and things being stacked, it sounded like that. And I was like, okay, I couldn't even pay attention to her story because I was so just like enthralled in this nonstop dish being put away sound. And so I made it into, like, I was trying to make it into, like, an example call of, like, okay, this is how not to do your calls. and then she called back and said, I wasn't doing anything. I've been plagued by my voice being interrupted on phone calls when I try to talk about this to people for years. So I felt like a total asshole for being like that on the air, and I apologized, and she accepted it. And she reiterated her story. And it got to the point where things got really kind of dark for her, and she was even kind of like in this strangely this is space where she was very distant, almost like deep depression, but I wonder if there was something else going on, like oppression or something.
Yeah.
And one of her friends even called in and said, hey, you know, I just want to let you know she's doing kind of okay, but she's afraid to call back in because things have been worse.
Yeah.
Well,
I hope everything's better for her.
It was a weird thing where you know these are basically EVPs of some sort we're getting through. They weren't voices, but they were some sort of vocal interference that were really kind of bizarre. on the Instagram and Facebook for Real Ghost Stories Online. If you look that up, you can scroll back to, I think it's like the beginning of October, late September, somewhere around there.
Yeah.
And me and my daughters were out at the Prairie Grove Battlefield that I was just talking about. There's all these old structures there that were in relation to the area. They're not original to the battlefield, but they were salvaged and saved and moved to this historic site.
Yeah.
One of them is an old schoolhouse from the area. And underneath the schoolhouse is a little crawl space. And of course, the girls, you know, being my children, are down there with cameras on their phones and trying to tape and catch something and all of that. And my oldest had her camera, her video going, and she's just filming through the grate underneath the school. And she's like, oh, Dad, come here, look at this. And me and Harp had already, like, moved on to the next building. And I come back, and we take a look at it. And she clearly caught two shadow people, or maybe, I don't know, one shadow person. It looks like two shadow things moving through this dusty crawl space area very clearly. And there is no way for a shadow to get into the scene, the way that this was all angled. We were not walking behind her. We were over on the other side. That was the one thing I thought of possibly, but we weren't even there. So it's as clear as day, and it's weird. And I posted it, and several people in the paranormal community, even folks who, you know, used to investigate with Ed and Lorraine Warren, even said, yeah, I think you got a shadow person right there. So my oldest is pretty proud that she got some confirmation from some of the higher ups, or if you will, in this world of paranormal, saying, yeah, I think you got a shadow person on camera. But that's one of my more recent, I guess, experiences that I had involving something paranormal. I know there's more, but I can't even think of them right now. They're nowhere near as dramatic as, like, some of the stuff we are
doing. Oh, yeah. No, Richard in Chattanooga, was he the security guard? Is that?
No, that was a totally different guy. That guy, similar saga.
Yeah.
If there was season two of Richard in Chattanooga, and it's like one of those, you know, FX series where it's like totally different cast, that guy would be the next season.
Yeah.
But no, that was a gentleman who worked in a, it was an old hotel that would be converted into housing units.
Yeah.
And I guess there's a lot of lore around the building of it being used for, like, mafia, all sorts of stuff.
That's what it was, yeah.
And he, on camera, caught all sorts of stuff, and he would post it up to our Facebook page and whatnot. We were just very careful. If you asked me today what the city it was or what the name of the building was, I couldn't tell you because I don't remember.
Yeah.
And because I was very careful of, we don't want to necessarily say that on the air, because
oh, someone correct.
Owns this building. And they're yeah. trying to, like, get people to live in it. So we never really addressed that. But it is a legitimate building. The videos are legit, at least as far as I know from what he sent me.
Yeah, there was one where just all of the lights.
It was getting really impressive to him, and he thought he was bringing things home, and it was starting to affect his family, too.
Yeah. I know that there's a video that he posted where it looks like all of these lights in this hallway are just going ham. And yeah. I was like, I'd quit.
Yeah, and you know, and for a while, I think, you know, he wanted to right away, but, you know, for financial reasons, he had to make money for his family, and unfortunately, that's where so many people find themselves, and I feel horrible, and that's one of the biggest things. You know, you get these stories of people having these horrible things going on in their homes, or where they work or whatnot, and the attitude is like, well, just leave. It's like, that's not the easiest thing to do.
It's not. It's not.
It's like, there's a lot that goes into moving or being a job or something, but he eventually did find something else and got the hell out of there.
Oh, that's great.
But it was quite a story. And in fact, I ended up doing like a retrospective on it. I think Halloween 2019 is the episode, or it might have been around Christmas, where it was... I aired all of his calls together in one episode, so you can hear all of it together. In fact, our eyes.
I think that was Halloween of last year.
Okay, And you listen back to that if you want to hear the full saga on it. But yeah, quite a story.
It just, there's so many calls that you guys get in that I'm just like, I'm so glad that's not me. Like, I know that sounds really bad to say, but I am so glad that it's not me.
Yeah, no kidding. I mean, it's so interesting, the calls that we get and then where they end up sometimes, because so many of the stories from our shows now have been made in, you know, one of the gazillions of paranormal shows on television, you know, from like haunted hospitals to Haunted on Netflix. What me and Jenny find funny is Haunted, the Netflix series, pops up all the time as like suggested viewing. And we don't really watch any paranormal shows, but the graphic that all shows up on our Netflix for suggested viewing is the song Ghost Clown. And
oh my God.
Came up with the title Ducky Ghost Clown, me. And that was from the Oscar Mendoza story. Oscar had a contributor for Ghost Syndicate, and he shared the story of these zombies, or these clowns that came and like scared the hell out of him and his family in Mexico after a parade had an accident in his childhood. And it was then eventually that they reached out and got in contact, and they did an episode on Haunted, and it's fine. But the crowd is this, you know, dead zombie clown. But it's just funny because they're like, that wouldn't be on the screen right now if we had done that show and that story had never aired. And it's just kind of, it's funny seeing these things go through, you know, full circle and exposure that never ends up getting, which is awesome.
Yeah. It's crazy the stories that you guys get. I gotta tell you, and the fact that it's starting to, it's starting to creep its way into your Netflix account is a little weird. We're gonna go ahead and we're gonna wrap this up, guys. I want to say a huge thank you to Tony Bruschi for coming and hanging out with us. Tony, could you real quick put out all of your social medias and all of your podcasts that you have going on right now?
Sure. Podcasts, you can just search them anywhere you download podcasts. Real Ghost Stories Online is one of them. The Grave Talks is another one. A true run that we've been doing now for a half a year and going great is called Dark Side of Wikipedia. And then Harper has hers, which is called Cautionary Tales with Harper. Just look up Real Ghost Stories Online on Facebook, Instagram. Those are the main ones. You can find us there. I'm at Tony Bruschi, Bruschi.
That is fantastic. Again, Tony, man, thank you for coming on here. I am blown away by the fact that I just had a conversation with you. You don't even know, man. You don't even know.
I'm honored to have someone that wants to talk to me, so I appreciate it.
Absolutely. And guys, go follow them everywhere, all your platforms, everywhere. Just shout it out from the rooftops. If you don't listen to them, you are doing yourself a disservice. Let me just tell you that right now. And also, you can find me on Instagram at Sparks of the Paranormal. I've also got a Facebook group by the same name. Guys, thanks for hanging out with us. Thanks for listening to our last episode with Jonathan Johnson from West Virginia Paranormal Investigations. Thank you again to Tony Bruschi, and stay tuned for next week. There's going to be another really good episode coming up. I'm sitting down with Lindia Johnson. She's got over 3 decades of investigation and also helps train other investigators. She's got some great stories. So hang on for that, and we'll talk to you next time on Sparks of the Paranormal.